Episode 175 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded March 8th, 2018. Shooting the deuce.
No.
So
I hear it now.
So last episode, which we recorded also today, Les suggested that we were shooting the deuce in regards to us recording two episodes in the same night.
I expressed that perhaps that was not the best phrasing to use.
Yeah, they said it sounded awkward, but really it wasn't until Grant said it. I get it now.
So Les and I made the decision that we were going to change the name of the episode. Randy's not on board.
No, we are not shooting the deuce.
It's a shitty title.
Folks, so this episode, this week, we are discussing three shows. Well, one of them is an old show, but the other ones are brand new shows. 7 Seconds over on Netflix, which is a new crime drama. iZombie is returned for its, like,
Fourth season.
And then Good Girls is a new comedic.
It's dramedy.
On NBC that we're also going to be chatting about a little bit. But before we get into all of that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And my voice is going.
Is it?
Yeah, this is going to be a fun episode. I think it just cracked right there. This could be a second puberty for me. I might be getting hair in other weird places now.
Good for you, Grant.
Like the inside of my elbow or something.
A second puberty is when you become a werewolf.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So.
Yes. Boys becoming men becoming wolves.
Yeah. So you guys might not make it out of this room after this episode.
I just have to outrun Les. Of course, he is closer to the door.
You guys both nervously look to the door.
Look, we're ready for werewolf attacks, all
just
right?
Just lock it behind me, so.
This is fair. Folks, so we are not going to be doing news this episode, and we are going to be, of course, leaving our listener questions to the end as our dessert.
Yes, dessert.
So I guess we should just kind of jump right into discussing these shows.
Right. Not a lot of appetizers this week. We're sorry about that. You got a couple of stale fries. That's it.
Yeah. None of that. No.
Yeah, there's going to be a TV revival of an old thing that you liked, but they're going to do it badly. Somebody else left a show, and there's a new showrunner on that thing.
Oh, yeah. Netflix announced 500 news. More shows.
And there were the news. Rob Schneider still sucks.
Still sucks.
Okay. First off, we have this show called 7 Seconds over on Netflix. This is one of those crime dramas.
So this is by Vina Sood, who's the same writer that did The Killing.
Yep.
Okay.
Which explains a lot of the tone of this show to me.
So much sense.
Had I realized that at the time I thought about it, because I usually just make our schedule based on like what's coming out. Had I realized that, I might have bypassed this because I fucking hated The Killing.
I was wondering what exactly – I mean, this isn't – it's not a bad show. I watched two episodes of it, which was more than I really thought I was going to give it, and I would consider watching more of it. Like, it's an interesting show. It's not really my speed.
I watched most of the first episode, and yeah, it's well done for what it is, but I feel like it's a little on the nose in what it's trying to say. And also, I think it's going to try to make me sympathize with characters that I can't possibly sympathize with. Because it opens, and this is not really a spoiler, it opens with this guy driving along, he's distracted by his phone, and he hits a kid.
He's trying to get to the hospital to see his wife.
See his wife who's having a baby. Right?
Yeah.
Is she having a baby?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's not paying attention. It's in the snow. And he basically runs over this. He knocks this kid off his bike. And basically kills this kid. Or at least that's what he thinks.
Yeah.
And then.
Does he not kill him?
And then his buddies show up. And they're all cops. And they're like, no, man, go. We'll care. Nobody saw you. We'll cover you.
And the cops tell him right then, like, have you been over the hill to see where the body landed? Because it's a bloodbath and the kid's dead.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
And I was like, okay, fuck all these people. Like, he's about to have a kid. I understand that he's got shit going on, but the notion that you would leave somebody's kid, dead or not, and leave their parents in that hell of, like, not knowing what happened, and you're about to have a kid, fuck that guy forever.
Yeah, his cop friends straight cover it up.
You cannot make those guys sympathetic at this point.
So by the end of the second episode that I watched, they've taken that, your shitty cop buddies have covered this up, and, like, fuck that kid and all the horribleness of it. And the buddy they've done this favor for is the one that wants it done least.
Yeah.
Didn't really ask you to do this.
Yeah.
Didn't ask you to make this a conspiracy. And so I feel like the show is setting up, to me, what the most interesting tension that the show is setting up is the tension of the fact that the guy they've saved by doing this is the one that does not want this covered up particularly.
Yeah. But the thing is, he went along with it, and I can't see a redemption arc that I would buy.
Just shock, but I feel like he's going to regret it, and I feel like the rest of his character motivations are going to be getting it. I thought this show was a different show, honestly, than what I sat down to watch. Yeah. There was, and I can't remember the name of it offhand, Shots Fired or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
But there's a cop procedural just recently, I think on network television, that was expressly about officer-related shootings, where I went like, hey guys, I see what you're trying to use television for here, but don't do this show right now.
Yeah.
Just fucking don't. There's no way you do these plot lines ripped from the headlines very well. And I thought this was that show. I thought it was about, because all I'd seen, I glanced at it, it was like 7 seconds, a cop and the death of a boy. Yeah. And I thought cop shoots boy who has toy gun or something like that, and that's going to be the plot of this show. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It made it so I really didn't expect the car accident.
Yeah.
But I'm more interested in what they've set up than I thought I would be. It is a more complex setup than I thought it was going to be. That said, I just don't want to watch this show right now.
We aren't crime drama guys. It seems.
I am a huge crime drama guy.
I can be noir-y.
You're crime noir.
I'm crime noir.
Yeah, and period piece crime. You like, you're all about that, but like straight up, just like crime dramas,
if somebody got murdered on This Is Us, I could give a fuck.
Yeah, but like wallowing in grief porn, which is what
this feels like. Grief porn.
I can't do it. I couldn't do it with The Killing.
Yeah.
Although I did end up watching that show just because I found some of the characters pretty compelling.
Grief porn.
Yeah. Just like that's what a lot of The Walking Dead ended up becoming to me.
Yeah.
And I can't handle this. Like, I watched about the first 15-20 minutes of this show, and that's all I could really do. And there's something like, now that I've had kids, I cannot handle any violence toward kids. It just immediately makes me shut down. I can't watch this.
Well, because as an empathetic person, you're watching this, and you're the way you're relating to it is, what if this happened to my kid? And that is not a thought you want to have. That is not an entertaining thought.
So if you take this and you give me, you don't even actually have to do it. Just give me the promise that someone will eventually show a superpower in a scene and you have a Marvel Netflix show.
Right.
Marvel Netflix is superpower grief porn.
If the kid gets out of the hospital bed and he has powers, it's a Marvel show.
If only if he's grief porn about it.
Yeah.
Like, is he grieving about getting the powers? And then I have to watch grief porn about how sad he is that he's strong?
Oh, yeah, be more sad, Daredevil. have a hard time with that fiery fist, iron fist.
Okay, that turned weird.
I'm sorry.
That got real weird.
Is my watching grief porn voice gross?
It's a little
It's
disturbing.
More compelling than Defenders, though. It's a better villain than they've had so far.
So are we all sort of on the same page that this is a well-done show, but it's just not in our wheelhouse?
No,
I would say that this is well done because I was surprisingly interested in it, despite it not really being up my alley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something that is up your alley, or it's definitely up Randy's alley. I'm not actually sure how enthusiastic you are about iZombie.
Big fan of iZombie.
Oh man, yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So the both of you guys,
I'm a huge Rob Thomas fan. I've liked everything the guy's done show wise. I watched both versions of Cupid.
20.
Yes, they're so good.
I make the joke every time.
Every time.
And Randy gives me a pity laugh every time.
I want to say his Twitter bio is not the musician.
That. Yeah, he does. He
or
says
the
that.
Yeah, the other Rob Thomas. Yeah.
It's like John Favreau and John Lovett.
Yeah,
the other one.
Yeah.
I loved iZombie, and it looks like so far this season I've watched all of them so far this
two,
season.
Right?
Yeah,
just
two.
Yeah.
They're back to the set. This show is more mythology than any show that does this many Monsters of the Week should have.
Yeah.
And they have never once given up their Monster of the Week, don't think.
No, they're still doing the case. The second case is like this weird blue blood woman who gets killed, and it could have been done in any previous season, except that the way they do it here is it ties into this weird thing about the city being walled off and them having to sneak humans out of it. And they tie the mythology into the Monster of the Week every time.
And they just keep ratcheting up, dealing with the realistic fallout, like implications and fallout of, okay, so zombies are real. How would the nation actually deal with, like, so they've walled off Seattle. There are people in Seattle that didn't get to leave that are not fucking happy about still being there.
They're basically hostages so they don't nuke the whole place.
Yes. And
so they're
yes.
doing no man's land here.
Basically.
In a way, yeah. And, but they still, it's still like a city. Like, there's a mayor. He's a zombie.
There's a functioning city, though.
There's a functioning city. And the zombie, Fillmore Graves, the military corporation that is run by zombies and that kind of started all this. And yes, it's called Fillmore Graves. That's iZombie's sense of humor.
Yeah.
They basically have like the peacekeepers that are out there keeping zombies from eating the humans and keeping the humans from burning the zombies to death.
Mm-hmm. And Ravi's a zombie at this point. Ravi and Liv are basically aligned almost against Major by the end of the second episode. Yeah. Like there's real character development happening with like sides being picked and the world fallout of zombies being discovered.
And the story arc for Major, I've always found Major to be one of those characters that could have been so boring.
Yeah.
He's like Captain Awesome from Chuck.
Yeah.
He's those guys. He had the role that could have been the boring straight white guy role, and instead he's getting him such
a I love Major. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every character on this show though, I really adore iZombie. I'm so excited that it's back.
Me too.
Do you guys feel like this is falling into that same theory of the best season of every of a lot of shows is that season 4?
It
very well could be.
It could go that direction.
Because
yeah.
we are at the end of season 3, Discovery Day had happened. Like
yeah.
zombies
this
are
just
the,
like
the
embracing
out.
The mythology
yes.
kind of thing.
And so yeah, season 4 opened with the like, all right, it's a new world. What the fuck are y'all going to do?
Clive finally knows.
The intro's changed this season.
Yeah.
The intro has a new character. Robert Knepper is in the intro animation now. The Mike Allred drawn like Dead Boy and the Elephant Man song and everything. He is the prophet.
Yeah.
Because last season we watched Blaine, who is David Anders' character. We watched him throw his dad down a well. His dad's a zombie and he hates his father. And instead of killing him, he throws him down a fucking well and just leaves him. So he comes back periodically to just yell at his dad.
And in the first episode, he comes back and he's become this crazy man and he takes over this church and becomes this prophet.
Yeah, so now his dad's been down a well and he's not dead. He's just insane. And he gets pulled up by a henchman, like, rescues him out of the well. And now he is this God talked to me
zombie prophet
who is raising a zombie army. So it's straight out of the fucking Goon. It's straight out of the Goon comics. Like, we have, like, the zombie prophet raising an army. Yeah, because he wanders into a church and kills the minister and takes his flock, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's so much going
on.
That
he's in the intro really gives me hope that this season could go bug shit crazy.
Like you say, the interesting thing is there's a lot of mythology, but the Monster of the Week keeps this show very approachable.
Yeah. I mean, it's always just a case of the week. I love Clive Babineau. Like, I like Malcolm Goodwin, I believe is the actor's name.
Yeah. And the guy who plays Ravi is Rahul.
Yes, Rahul, and I can't remember his last
fantastic.
Name.
He's fantastic.
He just shaved his mustache off on Twitter. He caught an enormous amount of shit for having this porn star mustache.
Okay, well, over on NBC, there's also a new show called Good Girls.
Yeah.
And this stars Christina Hendricks, Mae Whitman, and Retta. And, oh, did I spot a Matthew Lillard in there?
You did spot a Matthew Lillard.
He's back. Rahul. To a goofy role.
Also also an appearance by Rickety Cricket.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
Rickety Cricket.
Yes, I had to look up to make sure that was Rickety Cricket.
Yeah, I don't know what the actor's name is, nor do I care. He's Rickety Cricket.
Rahul Kohli is the actor's name from that's Ravi.
Yeah. Rickety Cricket is Rickety Cricket.
Yeah, Rickety Cricket.
He's great here. But so, Grant, did I pick up maybe that you didn't like this?
I don't know. I didn't watch all of it.
Oh, I watched both episodes.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I watched both episodes is because I watched the first one. And the premise is basically that they're these sort of – Mae Whitman is a single mom who's having trouble making her ends meet. Christina Hendricks is a mom of four. Her husband is cheating on her. And she's like this perfect mom who's like just trying to keep her life together. And then Retta is this mom with
working two jobs.
Yeah, she's working two jobs. Is it her boyfriend? It's not her husband, right? It's her boyfriend who's like a
– I think it's boyfriend. I'm not sure if they're married. But yeah, he's trying to – his stuff's not quite working.
He's maybe getting it together. But they're all sort of – they're not like – lower class or not poor, but they're definitely like struggling to stay middle class.
Yeah.
And then things happen and they decide that the only way they're going to make this work is to rob the grocery store where Mae Whitman's character works. And
now Mae Whitman is the bug shit crazy one that's always just suggesting dumb shit. Like you can't really do this.
But they go ahead and do it. And then that's the first season, first episode. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. And basically her Maywood's manager, who was sort of crushing on her and being creepy toward her.
It's David Hornsby, Cricket.
Is Rickety Cricket. He spots that, and then they have to deal with him. And so by the end of the first episode, they've basically, it looks like they've killed this dude. And I was like, what is the show about? I love the first episode, but I have no idea where they go with the show.
When they rob the grocery store, they're expecting to get like $30,000 or something like that.
And they get considerably.
They get like
more.
$250,000 or something.
Yeah.
And they realize that the grocery store is clearly a front for something.
Oh. Yeah.
And that like they have fucked up and robbed someone, like really robbed someone. And so at the end of the first episode, they come up to, I think, Christina Hendricks' suburb house, and there's just three gangsters sitting there like, hey, so you owe us all of that.
No, that's not till
second Is that
episode.
Second episode?
The first episode ends with them having apparently killed Rickety Cricket.
Yes.
Then the second episode opens, and he's alive, and they've got him stuffed up in the treehouse, not sure what to do with him.
Someone had asked in one of our questions this week, I think, or had made a comment, has anybody ever been thrown through a plate glass window in real life and just stood up afterwards like they were cool and finished the conversation? Because it happens in Jessica Jones. She throws a dude through a plate glass, and he stands up and has the rest of the like, And I love when it realistically happens. David Hornsby's character, Boomer, falls through a glass table, and he's fucked up.
Cuts
the fuck out of it.
But he gets up like he's still, yeah.
Yeah, but like I wanted to applaud because I was like, yep, that's how that goes, man. They even did it in an episode of The Mick recently where like she falls through a plate glass window and stands up, and they do it for comedic effect. She's got a huge chunk of glass in her fucking neck.
But he did survive it. He didn't look like he survived.
Yes, yeah, no, he survived
but
so far.
But then the gangsters show up, and they're like, yeah, you got to pay us all the money back with interest. And they've all spent some of the money. So it's looking very Breaking Bad. Like, basically, there's this gangster that they've sort of gotten involved with. There's another criminal that they have held, and they got to figure out what to do with. And it's not quite as dire as Breaking Bad. But
see, here's what's interesting then to me, because I think I had my expression? My hackles up or whatever about this. Because it felt like it's one of those shows that's once again trying to do a little bit of like a wry comedic take on a Breaking Bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you guys are saying it's not as comedic as it came across in the beginning.
Yeah, no, it's got comedic elements.
It seems like this kind of bright, sunny, lighthearted, like, these housewives.
I thought the same thing. It's not as lighthearted as the promo shots make it look.
Yeah. They're going to be it's all cutesy and like – Retta's daughter is super sassy. When the
not murder happens, it's pretty dark.
Yeah.
And then when the gangster shows up at her house, it is
so,
really
is it like
so
a big
dark.
Tonal shift that goes on in the show?
No, it's not a tonal shift. I wouldn't say. But so when I realized that this show is not the lighthearted thing I thought it was going to be is when Boomer changes. He likes her. You know her boss likes her, and he's a slime ball, and she doesn't like him, right?
Yeah.
He shows up at her apartment to basically tell her that he knows that he recognized her from the robbery. Yeah.
And that she's going to have sex with him or...
And then it turns into a rape.
Yeah, basically.
And I don't mean any comedic at all. Like, they don't play it like he makes a pass that's bad or anything. He tells her straight up, like, no, this is fucking happening. And has her turned around on a table and is about to rape her.
Yeah.
Where I was sitting there going, this is happening. The show is going here. Yeah.
And that's at the end of the first episode.
Not the fucking show I thought it was going to be. Yeah. And Hendricks comes out and fucks him up.
Yeah.
Like, that's when they damn near kill. So that later on, when she's like, when Red is like, you about killed a dude? And Hendrick, like, no, he was about to rape me. She's not exaggerating. Yeah. Like, the show got real fucking dark in that moment.
And that's, I think that they do a good job balancing that. Because I was surprised. The comedic, there's still elements of the comedic that I think is interesting. But they're also doing, like, Matthew Lillard's little sad clown thing where he's realizing what he fucked up with his wife.
Honestly, the least unbelievable thing in the entire show is that anyone would cheat on Christina Hendricks.
Yes, it's true.
That Matthew Lillard is married to Christina Hendricks and cheated.
And doesn't spend all his days thanking the Lord for what has happened.
Eat a bullet, man. What the fuck?
But no, I really liked this. I'm actually curious to see where it goes. Now, with all network shows, I assume that by episode 6 I'll have lost interest. But maybe this is a 13-episode order. I don't know.
So what got me interested in watching episode 3 actually was the last 5 minute of episode 2.
Yeah.
The gangster with the neck tat that they've robbed, who is kind of a smarter, cooler. He reminds me of is it Nacho in?
Yeah, it's Nacho. Yeah, he's got a lot of that vibe.
And we're like, man, you were smarter than the hoodlums you probably run with. I kind of want to see you become a better hoodlum. And you also see across that episode that Meg Whitman suggests a bunch of crazy shit, but Christina Hendricks is her sister, and even though she appears to have her life together and stuff, the couple of clutch moments where they have to fucking, like, point blank fucked up lie to somebody, Hendricks just does it. Calm.
Yeah, she's like, so she good. Just
lied, and like it scares Retta. Like, you lied to that person really, really well. Yeah, thank you. Like, no, that guy was not complimenting you. You're kind of sociopathic. There's a bonding moment at the end of the episode. Well, they damn near get killed, and Hendricks in a clutch moment talks their way out of it.
Yeah.
And it so impresses the gangster that he shows back up at the end of the episode with a like, hey, so I need your help with something. You seem pretty like, and he asks if they have passports. So I get the feeling that they are all three about to be in mules.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys are really selling a show that I was just going to go,
yeah. Yeah. No, it's the second episode.
I was surprised how much was there. Yeah.
I liked the first episode quite a bit. Like, I was interested in seeing where it went. Mm-hmm. And then the second episode, I was like, oh,
I went, okay.
I like this. I'm curious to see where
this
they
is a moving parts crime drama I would watch. This now, is not grief porn. This is crime noir.
Yeah. And why I'm also, not? It's got the sense of fun works, even though it is, it can go dark.
I just want Christina Hendricks on TV too.
Yeah. She's having Christina. And she is like, I mean, with Breaking Bad, Heisenberg's thing was the smarts that he had.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, Hendrix's thing is this gift of gab, this ability to lie and this ability to talk in any situation. And I think that that's going to be her thing, where she can survive in this world where she really doesn't belong.
And I think similarly, we're going to see that bottled up ambition that you've shunted aside for years rear its head as a monster. I think she's going to turn into a monster.
I think so, too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Putting that one back on my docket. Going to actually watch it. You guys want to take a break and then do some listener questions?
Yeah, let's do it. Dessert.
Guys, listener question time. So if you guys like us on Facebook once a week, you guys can go over there and ask us a question, or sometimes once for every 2 weeks. This is the rare exception with this. But our first question comes to us from Nick Ties, who says, Les, there has been a lot of talk of possibly adding time travel to the Star Wars universe. Since you are the time travel expert with crazy string theory board to prove it, I don't know what that's about, but I guess you have a crazy string theory board.
Maybe. I don't know.
Oh.
He will. He will in the future.
I do someday.
He will, and he has? Question mark? I was wondering, what is your take on this idea of time travel in Star Wars, and whether or not some TV shows could use a little more time travel added in?
Do you think Star Wars belongs... Should Star Wars have time travel? I don't think it should.
It does now.
But it shouldn't.
It's unavoidable, and it's happened already.
I mean, Star Trek's always had time travel, and that's fine, but I don't know that Star Wars...
I am generally of the opinion that unless your show premise is based around time travel, throwing it in, you will never have the shit set up to make it work and not have to hand wave away a huge amount of shit. Like,
Lost did it, and there's no problem.
Not a single goddamn problem with it.
Well, I mean,
I think you're going to immediately like ensnare yourself in stuff you didn't think to set up. Like, unless you were plotting your whole show to have this involved, to have characters jump back in seasons and shit, I feel like adding it in later is just asking to retcon some stuff. That said, I will accept the addition of time travel in Star Wars because so much of Star Wars history is so bad.
That's fair.
The entire prequel, all the midichlorians, everything that happened, the Skywalker family, the whole plot line of the original trilogy, all of it. If we could just go back and wipe the whole slate clean and start over with a movie called Jupiter Ascending.
What's wrong with you?
Wait, I got off track there.
Yep, lost me at the end.
Wait, do you actually think Jupiter Ascending should be the prequel to Star Wars?
No, I enjoyed an original sci-fi movie for a minute there when Star Wars is the only goddamn franchise.
Just started watching Valerian and the Thousand
Planets.
Don't
do that. Just watch.
What the
watch
fuck
Fifth
is
Element.
That movie?
Watch the opening market scene, which is amazingly shot.
Yeah,
and then go watch Fifth Element.
And what's the deal with Dane Hahn trying to do like a Keanu Reeves impersonation the whole time?
Their romance doesn't work. None of it works. I think it's Rhiannon that's the shapeshifter in that movie.
So yeah, all
her whole
garbage.
Fucking plot line is the cheapest shot I've had taken at me in a theater in a long time. Her character only exists so you give a shit about her death, and it's such a cheap fucking shot.
The whole thing.
I was
bad.
Angry.
So which shows should have time travel added to them? Bonus points if it's a sitcom from the '70s.
Night Court.
Holy shit! Yes. Are they bringing defendants from other time periods? So like Dan is defending time traveling.
What
horrors?
If Judge Harry can actually perform a magic trick of time travel?
He bangs his gavel and they travel in time.
I think Dan travels in time during sex.
Oh God!
So like he finishes sex, he comes out of the mop closet. And is in a different time period and has to have sex again to get back.
You know, what's funny is Dan.
And one of these days, that orgasm will be the leap home.
Dan could go. Dan could go back, but he couldn't go too far forward.
He'd be arrested.
He's gonna. Yeah, Dan is gonna be. That's a bad thing.
Gray-haired Harry Anderson having to try. You know, Christine's gonna be his lawyer.
Uh-huh.
As Dan tries to defend himself.
Night Court needs time travel. I think you're 100% right.
Oh God, just Night Court now trying Dan.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a lot of the sexism that was in 70s and 80s sitcoms would not fly today.
No.
Okay.
The Partridge Family bus just pops into the present and like.
Oh, it's like the Brady Bunch when they had the Brady Bunch around modern times, and it's like, what is wrong?
They show up
with
to their
family?
Gig, and it's like a Vans Warped Tour.
Yeah.
they would kill at ACL though. Yeah, I could totally see them at Coachella. All right, next question comes to us from Jonathan Huffnagel, who says, what is your power animal? Or what was your favorite animal as a kid? Or what animal are you most like as an adult? Finally, what is your power animal from a TV show? He says he gets a strange feeling that a chicken may be summoned by Ashley, and I would say accurate.
Yeah. She would mention a chicken. Let's be clear. Ashley does not have the power to summon chickens. She has chickens. She didn't summon those chickens. They came out of eggs like all
Are
chickens.
Are you sure?
I didn't
Did
see
she them. Summon the egg?
I didn't see them born, so I can't be sure, but I'm pretty sure those are regular chickens.
So you're not 100%.
I'm not 100%. Okay, fair enough. I can't say with 100% certainty that Ashley did not summon those chickens.
Well, then don't say it, Randy.
You're right. You're right.
She summoned those chickens.
That's not science. It's not good science, and Ashley would not be proud of me.
So you guys, like, I'm not. I don't find myself to be a particular animal person. I don't remember as a kid being all that. Like, I remember I wanted a tattoo as a kid of like a flying gecko with like a superhero.
That's
cape.
Your power animal.
But
for
that
sure.
seemed really stupid to me now. Nope. And I'm like, was I even into geckos?
I wish you had that tattoo.
Can you imagine?
I wish you had gotten the tattoo of the flying gecko. So that right now, this day, you had to keep telling the story and be like,
I really want you to now have a tattoo of the Zeppelin swan song. but the Geico gecko.
But it's a gecko.
It's just a gecko.
Yeah. Oh man. I so wish you had that tattoo. It'd be like 10 years of people going, you're a big Geico fan, huh? And you're like, no,
no
I got
God
it, before,
damn it
before Geico had it.
No, I'm just really into geckos.
The lawsuit's
geckos.
Still pending.
I can't think of any. I didn't have any animals I wanted tattooed on me as a kid, and now I feel sad.
Yeah, I mean I had a cat as a kid. But as far as like animals on TV, I don't really remember. I mean, the cat from Sabrina the Teenage Witch was awesome.
Miss Lion on Amazing Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends a dog.
Lion on Steven Universe. That's the best animal on TV.
Jake the dog is the best animal.
True. I forget
best
he's a dog.
Best friend, best dog ever. Okay, last question comes to us from Ross Brown, who says, make a show even better by replacing the main character in the show with another character that actor has played in like another show.
I'm just going to get this out of the way. Cheers, Ted Danson. You're bringing his Good Place character. He's a demon. He runs the bar.
Okay. I thought if you're going to try and switch it the other way around, it's not going to work.
No. I'm saying you redo Cheers, but the character is Ted Danson's demon trying to be a better person and running Cheers.
Oh, man. Okay, mine is I'm going to take Vic Mackey and I'm going to throw him into No Ordinary Family.
Oh, Jesus.
And see if he can make
that show at all good. But imagine it. Imagine No Ordinary Family. There's this wholesome family, but Vic Mackey, is this force of nature, just like corrupt cop who will do whatever, and now he has powers. Imagine him just like going up to drug dealers and just stealing everything.
You know what the crazy thing is that works with almost every role that he's been.
The commish.
Because you go back, the commish is Vic Mackey. You go to Daddy-O as Vic Mackey. You remember that show, Daddy-O?
Vegas.
Put
him in
show.
Gotham with superpowers.
Yes, Gotham. Any show where he is Vic Mackey instead, it's better. Because that's his best role.
I would replace Kurtwood Smith on That 70s Show with Clarence Boddicker.
Oh. I'm not sure that's not pretty close.
Yeah.
Clarence Boddicker had more of a sense of humor, but equally violent.
I was thinking of like other people that you could like Bob Odenkirk with anything from Mr. Show and Better Call Saul, but that would still just be funny as fucking work.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would still work.
All of David Cross's roles, he should be Tobias Funke. And everything else he's been, he should be Tobias Funke.
Yes.
Yeah, Jason Bateman on if Arrested Development had been his character from Dodgeball.
Oh, jeez.
Actually, he'd have fit the rest of the family. Someone else would have had to save the Bloom family. He would have fit.
Yeah.
I feel like his character in Dodgeball is just him in real life, or him from when his 20s. Well,
I feel like his character in Ozarks is like is just Michael slightly more serious. So, I'm trying to think like in trying to think Deadwood. Timothy Olyphant's character from Santa Clarita Diet as the Marshal of Deadwood.
If it had been instead of the Jim Jones, because you could have had Powers Booth just play Jones.
That's true.
I think that's a pretty fun question there. Thanks, Ross. Guys, we did it. We wrapped up this episode pretty quickly here.
Yep.
We're going to go ahead and call it for this week. Obviously, we record both of these a week ago because we're doing South by Southwest.
One last one I've got to mention.
Oh.
If you took Justified and basically did Sneaky Pete so that it's Tim Oliphant's drug dealer from Go faking being a marshal. He just puts the hat on, tells everybody he's in charge, and goes with it.
And shoots people.
Shoots people. Katie Holmes is locked up somewhere.
On that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap things up here. Les and Randy, thank you guys so much. Listeners, thank you so much. We will be back next week with a fresh new episode. But until then,
TV Dudes out!
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.